Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and our third episode of Better Than Better. This one captured live in South Minneapolis. Listen as Melissa Locke helps us stretch toward better than better communication.
I'm Melissa Locke, happy to be here now with all of you. And as I think of being here this morning, I also think of everything else that's here with us and everything out there. These are hard times. And I've been thinking about a line in a song that I really love called by Carrie Newcomer, and she says, "I don't know if everything will turn out fine. All I know is there is help in hard times." So I'd like to dedicate our time together, all that we've been doing and the singing and the moving and the listening and my words, to being help and to being helped in hard times. There are a lot of people coming here from a lot of different places, so know that you are home. And someone in my life that helps me feel at home sent me a poem yesterday that I want to share with you as we begin, and let it help us dedicate this time. "I will bring my whole messy human self, because I know, I just know, deep in my bones, that you are already running to meet me. There are no cuts on this team. You said you'd take it all. So here I come, me and all my humanity. We are on my way." Thank you, Sarah Speed, for those words, and LJ, who sent them to me. So we are talking about this word better these weeks. And so you listen to our podcast maybe, or I would like you to catch up with them. We've had a couple so far on a better self and better conflict, and this week's is built very much on those two, and it's better than better communication, something that we can all get a little better at, I believe. A lot of times, better is good, and that's the thing about this word. We need to pay more attention to it. So better than better communication. We always want our fabric messages to be practicable and to matter for your real life, but I doubt anybody came here for like a communication skills workshop. And if you did, there's way better places to go than from me and from fabric. But I think that better than better communication that I want to talk about is not actually about skills. It's about something else. Because, you know, we know plenty of people who are just fine communicators in this world, right? Can you think of a few very skilled ones out there who are controlling narratives quite well and causing a lot of harm, a lot of violence, a lot of suffering? So the skills is not what we're talking about. It's good to get better at conveying information, at maybe helping make your point, at shaping the narrative. I'm practicing communicating right now. I'll probably be doing a little more reading than I wish I were, but practice, right? So practicing these skills matters. But I think this all reveals a better than better question. So we always talk about better questions, but now I think we're going to have to say better than better questions at Fabric. And so what is the purpose of your better? So when you hear that word, why better? We need to stop and think about the purpose. And that really comes clear with better than better communication. This is an amazing power that we have to communicate with each other, we humans. We can use it for good or ill and everything in between. And so what I want to help us glimpse today is this better than better communication that stretches toward connection. It's toward connection and not control. It's beyond the mechanics and the function of communicating, and it's really about something simple that I think we all want and need, and that's to see and be seen. So it's easy to point our fingers out at the obvious control freaks out there, the pundits, the story spinners, the tyrants, right? But I think this better than better conversation gives us a reality check that there is a part of all of us that's susceptible to that tyrannical force, that tyrannical call of better, better, better all the time. It's that voice that's always comparing and judging ourselves, thinking that we're not quite enough, we're not good enough, we're not doing enough. So what does a tyrant like that need? They need control, right? And better so easily takes control of us again and again. We see it in our communication. Greg named some of this last week as he described how we get stuck in high conflict and how much harm that causes and how much we miss, how much growth doesn't happen because of it. So that's why we're looking at better than better communication. Better communication, again, isn't all that bad. It's just, it starts out with a different purpose. And the purpose matters. So let's look at the definition of just plain old better communication. I think that's one that strives to understand and to be understood, and this is the key word here, from my perspective. So, not a bad thing, but by itself it can lead to trouble. So let's break this down. You heard these happening in our skit with Kenny and Chris. It looks for these things. One of the things it looks for is clarity. So if I just say it better, did you hear Kenny like repeating himself over and over? If I just say it louder or slower or funnier, you know, fill in your own blank there. Maybe I need to be more clever or more succinct, or maybe I need to say it longer, more often. Or what if we want them, if only they would be more clear, right? Then I would get it. Better communication might also look for certainty. So knowing, proving, defending, offering advice that is not asked for. I told you, I can't help if you don't get it. Do I have to explain everything? Like I said, I took care of the rent, I Venmo'd my part. By the way, do you know how to track your Venmo account? Because I could show you right here, right? No thanks. I love Anne Lamott describes help as the sunny side of control. I like that one. All right, so self-centering, that's the third thing that I think better makes us start getting sucked into. And what we do then is we show disinterest, we dismiss, we diminish. So this can sound like things we're probably familiar with, both doing and having it done to us. You know, I'm sure it wasn't that bad, they love you. Maybe you just need to relax a little. Can we just watch that movie right now? And ironically, this better, like this self-centering that we do, it actually diminishes our own real selves too. We don't really know or have the words to express what we really want, what we really need, and so we get uncomfortable and we just kind of shove that feeling that there might be more going on in us away. And we pretend we're fine. We don't have any needs and wants. But this is not good. We might think it's like self-sacrifice or, you know, giving of ourselves, but actually that is self-diminishment and it doesn't help us communicate or connect. When we could be connecting, instead we're giving all our attention to like protecting this falsely fragile self-worth that we think isn't enough and needs to measure up and improve to be better. So this is what we want to move away from and toward something different. And I want to have a little fun here to help us do that. I'm going to need a couple of volunteers. This is going to be easy and fun, so don't worry. If you know something about music, you might have an upper hand. Jill? Chris, Ewan, are you okay with it? Okay, awesome. This is great. So we are going to be working with some music here, and I know both of you are pretty familiar with music, musicians, you hang out with a lot of musicians, listen to a lot of music. So I think, Jill, you're gonna be the tapper. I'm gonna have you be the tapper. And Chris is going to be the listener, okay? So, Chris, I need you to just turn around and look at everyone, but not at me, because I'm going to be holding up the names of some songs. So, for example, Mary Had a Little Lamb. Everybody, do we all know that song still? Okay, so we would tap that on the table. Mary had a little lamb, right? And then you would guess what it is, but we won't be singing, okay? All right, so I have four songs. Do you have any, hold up your fingers, how many do you think Chris and Jill will be able to connect on? 0, 1, 4, 2, 4, 3, we're all over the board here. All right, well, let's give it a try and see what happens, all right? Yeah, I think you'll know them. All right, let's start with, this one's pretty easy. We all know
this point,
this
Melissa started holding up signs with song names on them, and Jill started tapping them. See if you can figure out what they are.
Okay. Chris, any guesses? You got it? Wow, okay. All right, it was Happy Birthday. I know, yeah. I'm a little worried here. Okay. All right, here's the next one, everybody. We've all heard this one. Okay.
Okay.
You got it. All right, I think any more is just gonna. Any idea?
Sounded a lot like Happy Birthday.
Well, don't sing that to me on my birthday. It was the Star Spangled Banner. All right, two more. We got this. All right. All right. U of M people. That's a hint. Minnesota Rouser. That was a hard one. You're not. Sorry. Okay, I really think Chris is going to get this one. See, I really do. You know that? Okay. It's the last one. Help them out. Do it again. Oh my gosh, it's so hard. You have been an amazing sport. We will rock you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking that.
Yeah. Thank you, you guys.
Sure.
Wow. All right. That worked. Okay, it was so clear, right, to us? It's in my head, I could just hear the music, right? And Chris knows a lot of music. Yeah, so I think this is a great example of what we do when we communicate. It just seems so clear to us, right? And we don't really have empathy for that the other person is hearing something totally different. They have their own universe, their own context, their own lack of context in this case, right? So really, the fact that we can successfully communicate is somewhat of a miracle. We made a diagram. It's based on many years of research. No, just kidding. But it's kind of based on this, I think we all kind of know this is what's going on. And I left space on your Sunday paper to make your own sketch, your own version of this. But think about what has to happen for us to communicate. So in my head, I've got all these thoughts and ideas and feelings, memories, these experiences, and I want to share them with you. So I'm going to choose some words. You would have to know these words. I'm gonna have a tone. I'm not gonna, like you can say things in different tones, and you can say really happy things in a sad tone, and it's quite confusing, right? So there's our tone, there's our body language. We are very good as humans at picking this up from each other. So hopefully all of that goes into your brain, the meaning. I've chosen those things, I've made this meaning, tried to communicate it to you, and then you take that, And you are making some kind of meaning in your head. And I really don't ever know if you actually got it. I don't know. How do we know that? And then you look at what's all going on around each of us, too. I have my world of memories and experiences and culture and identity. And that is all affecting how I am hearing you, right? And inspecting how I'm sharing. And then so do you, and yours is different than mine. And thank God it is, right? This, we need this difference in our world. It is what makes our world so special and so full of life. So when you look at all that that needs to happen, it's amazing how connected we end up feeling and how we can communicate. In her new book, Atlas of the Heart, Brené Brown named story stewardship as one of the three main skills that we need to foster meaningful connection, she calls it. And I think it's ways to weave life deeply. We talk about that here. And she says story stewardship means honoring the sacred nature of your story and my story, the ones we share and the ones we hear. So when we treat our stories as sacred, as holy, yours and mine, and even that guy's too, we honor our humanity, we build trust, and we weave deeper connections. I think that makes it sound, you know, communication a little intimidating. Like, isn't it just, we do it every day, right? We drive a car, a lot of us, every day too, and forget, like, dang, this is a powerful machine, right? But our communication is power. Even though a lot of times, you know, I'm just at the grocery store, I just need to function. I can give me a burger and a side of fries and a Sprite or whatever, right? Just tell me what I owe you for the rent. I'll take care of it. It's done. Bing, bang, boom. Tell me what you need. But isn't that part of the problem? We turn these opportunities for human connection into transactions, into functional things. And that's really sad. We're missing something. It really downsizes who we are, and it diminishes the potential of who we are together. The potential of just our simple words, our body language. So, you know, I can relate to doing this as a parent, right? Every day, probably, you're trying to do important things that are actually important, and your kid is asking for, can I just have a little more screen time? And you know, we should really talk more about that, but yes, just take the more screen time and go down and just leave me alone for a while, I have some work to get done, right? Or your coworker wants to talk about something that happened and didn't go well, and you're like, I'm sure it went great. I'm sure they didn't mean anything by it. It's fine, it's fine, right? We're diminishing things. And we don't do this stuff because we're bad. We don't. We do it because we're humans and we're tired sometimes, right? Or we're worried, we're hurting. We do it because people are just so people-y. We're so people-y, you and me. And connecting is hard, but it's also wonderful, and our brains are incredibly made for it. There's a wonderful neurologist who I think might be from Russia named Yuri Hassan, and works at Princeton and did a TED Talk, and I want to just share the first couple minutes with you here.
Imagine that you invented a device that can record my memories, my dreams, my ideas, and transmit it to your brain. That will be a game-changing technology, right? But in fact, we already possess this device, and it's called Human Communication System and Effective Storytelling. And to understand how this device is working, we have to look into our brains. And we have to formulate the question in a slightly different manner. Now we have to ask how these neural patterns in my brain that are associated with my memories and ideas are transmitted into your brains. And we think that there are two factors that enable us to communicate. First, your brains now is physically coupled to the sound wave that I'm transmitting to your brains. And second, we developed a common neural protocol that enables us to communicate. So how do we know that? In my lab in Princeton, we bring people to the fMRI scanner and we scan the brains while the other telling or listening to real life stories. And to give you a sense of the stimulus we are using, let me play you now 20 seconds from a story that we used, told by a very talented storyteller, Jim O'Grady.
So I'm banging out my story and I know it's good. And then I start to make it better. By adding an element of embellishment. Reporters call this making shit up. And they recommend against crossing that line. But I had just seen the line crossed between a high-powered dean and assault with a pastry, and I kind of liked it.
Okay, so now let's look into your brain and see what's happening when you listen to these kind of stories. And let's start simple. Let's start with one listener and one brain area, the auditory cortex that processes the sounds that come from the ear. And as you can see, in this particular brain area, the responses are going up and down as the story unfolding. And now we can take these responses and compare it to the responses in other listeners in the same brain area. And we can ask how similar are the responses across all listeners. So over here you can see five listeners. And we start to scan their brains before the story is starting, when they simply lie in the dark and waiting for the story to begin. And as you can see, the brain area is going up and down in each one of them, but the responses are very different and not in sync. However, immediately as the story is starting, something amazing is happening.
So I'm banging out my story and I know it's good. And then I start to make it...
Suddenly you can see that the responses in all of the subjects going look to the story, and now they are going up and down in a very similar way across all listeners. And in fact, this is exactly what's happening now in your brains when you listen to my sound speaking. And we call this effect neural entrainment.
Wow, isn't that cool? Thank goodness we're not all laying in those scanners right now, but our brains would maybe be kind of matching up. I love that. So we're going to see a little more of the end of this. I encourage you to watch everything in between. But for now, just think about how we're made for this coupling, as he calls it, this neural connection. We long for this kind of sharing. We're made for it. You get it, and I get it, and we're getting it together, right? We're hearing the music together. We're hearing the story together. I think it looks a lot like this example that Yuri shared at the end of his talk.
Because after all, the people we are coupled to define who we are. And our desire to be coupled to another brain is something very basic that's starting at a very early age. So let me finish with example with my own private life that I think is a good example how coupling to other people really going to define who we are. This is my son, Jonathan, at a very early age. And see how he developed a vocal game together with my wife, only from the desire and pure joy of being coupled to another human being. Now think how the ability of my son to be coupled to us and other people in his life going to shape the man he's going to become. And think how you change on a daily basis from the interaction and coupling to other people in your life. So keep being coupled to other people. Keep spreading your ideas, because the sum of all of us together, coupled, is greater than our parts. Thank you.
The sum of all of us together is greater than our parts. I could watch that 1,000 times. The baby scene. So what did you see? What are some words? Smiles. Confusion. Nonsense. Eye contact. Connection. I saw tenderness and joy. Timing. Oh yeah, they were synchronized. Yeah. And love, a mother's love. Presence, right? The child had the power, was kind of leading, and the mom was following. This was better than better connection, better than better communication. There was no function other than connecting in that. There was no manipulation unless the baby was trying to make his mom do something, right? So seeing this mom and child and imagining the impact that kind of connecting has when we're young, it really makes me think about how important how we communicate with each other is and what we're doing when we talk to each other. Brené Brown's word of stewardship feels right. So our stories that we're sharing have such value. They're assets that we need to steward. They're not things that we get to keep or have or be stingy with. It reminds me of the parable that Greg shared at Anne's memorial a week ago yesterday. This parable of the talents. It's about a man who's going away and entrusts his assets to his servants, giving them each at least one talent, which was a measure of wealth, and it was a lot, like a lifetime's wages. And they were each supposed to take care of this wealth, and they had more than enough to use and to share, but one of them, it is said, knew that the master was a harsh man. That servant knew about better, right? So he was afraid, and he buried the talent in the ground. If better communication is a fearful, prudent, cautious, controlled sitting on our assets, better than better communication is more like that musical sing-song interaction. We're out there. We're being silly. We're letting go. That's easy to see in a child, right? But what does this look like when we get big and complicated? It's not always that delightful and fun. I wish it were. And I wonder, when does that idea get planted in us that we're not enough, that there's some way to be better, to do better? That parable gets at that hard spot for me, and I don't think I'm alone. I mean, who do you see yourself as in that story? I'm afraid I'm the one, the servant with the one talent that didn't use it, that's gonna not live my life, not share, not be generous, and be banished by the harsh master, right? Greg said that for those of us who knew Anne, we saw this, she was not one to sit on her assets. It was true. We experienced her generous sharing of herself, her curious and caring listening, her love, and so much more. But does that mean that Anne never felt scared or never felt like she might not be enough? Of course not. We all have that fear because we're human. We become self-conscious and we realize we're exposed. Adam and Eve in the story, they were in paradise and they realized they were naked and they covered themselves up to protect themselves. I want to ask an important question of us. Why do I and others, maybe you, hear that story of the talents and think that that servant's view of the master as this harsh and stingy guy, why does that mean that this is how it actually all works? Why do we think that master is God? I think it's because we're seeing it from our perspective, right? Our better perspective. We've been carefully taught. I think this book is hard, and it's full of better than better connective communication, but we've been taught it and read it with our eyes of better and comparison and earning. And so much gets lost in it, just like so much gets lost in our communications. You and I need to grow our better than better communication eyes and muscles. We want to do this stretching towards this connecting, right? And we do it a lot, and we all can grow. We all want to be seen. We all want to see each other. So let's finish up here with what helps us do that. How does this stretching look? The first one is simple. We stretch to actually see others. And there's a practice that can help us. There's a lot of ways to do that. One I want to highlight is just this simple idea of checking for understanding. But the trick is to really listen from their perspective. What is their perspective? What are they trying to say? What is most important to them? And then say it back and say, am I hearing you? And say it in the most elegant words that you can muster, as if you're stewarding, right? Because you are. And then ask them, did I get it? And we know this can feel disingenuous, right? I mean, you don't want to do it just to be a good listener or to ultimately get them to do what you want. Like, you actually can be curious. All right. It's complicated, though. What if we're listening to someone and they make us feel scared? Or they make us feel crazy, frustrated, angry? Are we just supposed to ignore all that and let it go, or let go of our principles and our convictions? No. No. That is where the second stretching comes. We have to stretch to see what is true. What is actually true? We can never know it, but we get glimpses, and it's really important that we do. Jesus was asked once, what is the most true thing that we should all know? What is the thing I should do to be saved, right? And he said, love God, love others as you love yourself. Love God and love others as you love yourself. So, but what do we really know about God and others and ourselves? What do we know about this source of life, this mystery in our world? There's another story that can help us, because the truth is, stories can hold the truth so much better than just our words. The story was about Zacchaeus. Jesus was coming into town, and Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus, and Zacchaeus was not a great guy, kind of a crook. Nobody liked him because he really had done some crooked things. So he didn't really want to be seen. He hid in a tree so that he could see Jesus. And then Jesus saw him and said, Zacchaeus, I see you. I'm coming to your house. I see you. Jesus saw people over and over and over in stories. People asked, I want to see. I want to be seen. And he said, yes, yes. So stretching to see what is true. It's a trusting, isn't it? It requires a self-forgetting, a little bit of self-forgetting. Those who lose their life will find it. That doesn't mean you should ignore or diminish yourself. Your true self is not the problem. It's the self-centeredness. And when we put ourselves in the center, we think we're on our own, so we do that. Jesus had these friends, these disciples that followed him around all the time and knew him really well. They were supposed to really know all this, right? And they'd hear all these parables, and one time they said, Jesus, how can we possibly do this? This is so hard. It's impossible. It's impossible to be that good. And Jesus said, yeah, I see you. You're right. On your own, it's impossible. Together with God, we got this. We got this. So that is the next stretch, to trust that, to trust and to be trustworthy with yourself and with others. Do others feel seen by you? Probably not all the time. Maybe you could ask and listen. Listen to what they say. Stretch to understand. Stretch to share what you feel, what you hear, what you see. And what about yourself? What about you? Are you trustworthy with yourself? Or are you sometimes a harsh master? Better than better communication as we grow can feel more like an all-out wrestling match than that sing-song banter that we saw and loved in the video. Brené Brown calls it a rumble. So we stretch to wrestle. With all that we have coming that we're bringing to that wrestling ground. All of our experiences, all of our hurts, all of our strengths, all of our feelings. And we choose to trust anyway that it's going to be okay, that that is what we're here for, to wrestle and to connect with each other and with ourselves and with this bigger truth in the world. This is where we can see growth. This is where we get out of our stuck high conflicts and we wrestle with one another to find growth and to know each other and see possibility that we couldn't see before. It's so important. We're all needed in this, even our perceived flaws. In the first week, that was a big part of it. We perceive these flaws, we don't want to be seen, but it's through those flaws and with those flaws that we think are flaws that actually become strengths and connective tissue. We need it. We need it all. And let's name it, sometimes doesn't feel like a wrestling match. Sometimes it can be a dance. It can be so joyful and so sweet when we can connect. So let's be open to that. Wrestle, dance, whatever you do, these are all ways that we can continue to persist and insist on life.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.